From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. I'm very excited today as today for the first time in Love to Love, we are having a show on poetry. With me in the studios is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai. Suresh Rao sir, as we call him, hails from Mumbai and is a chemical engineer by profession. He got his bachelor's from the University of Mumbai and master's from University of Arkansas, USA. He served the Department of Atomic Energy, Bombay, as a Class 1 officer and later joined the Bhabha Atomic Research Center in Bombay and worked there for 19 years till he retired at the age of 60. He is now settled in Prashanthi Nilayam, serving Bhagwan through Radio Sai from the year 2004. He is also a poet and has published 3 books, out of which 2 are books of poems and the third one is on Bhaja Govindam by Sri Shankaracharya. And with that short introduction, Suresh Rao sir, welcome to Love to Love.
Thank you, Chandu Saab. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sure, sir. Sir, coming to poems, when did you start writing poetry? And what do you usually write about in your poems?
Being a devotee of Swami's and involved with Swami's literature, and some of the dramas we conducted in Balvikas, etc., gave me an idea that some of the chinnakathas which Swami has been telling are very effective, can be put in a bit of a poetic form and make it more appealing to the listeners. That's one reason I thought of doing this. It only started when I came here in Prashanthi Nilayam in 2004.
Okay. You never wrote any poems when you were back in Bombay as working in the Sai organization?
Yeah, that didn't strike me at that time.
Okay. And under what subject matter does your poems fall under? Is it only Chinnakathas or do you even write on other topics?
Well, I'm mostly writing on Vedanta and philosophy.
Okay.
And Chinnakathas because I feel that this will be of benefit to many of the children and younger people, youth coming in. But my basic interest has always been philosophy and Swami's teachings. And that's how I started giving in study circles and all some sort of talks about spirituality. I started giving Vedantic topics and that's how I decided to put it in poetry form.
So talking about Vedanta, it's such a deep and probably a very difficult topic. So how easy is it for you to convert these high spiritual topics in poetic form? Something, and also you want it in such a way that people can understand it easily, because you don't want poetry again complicating what is already quite complex.
You are so right. I came to know this only when I started writing.
Yes.
And found how difficult it is to explain Vedantic truths in poetic form. But then I made some efforts and I think I, to some extent I have been successful. From the first book I wrote, Set Sail with Sai,
yes,
I had about 25 poems, out of which the first 10 are based basically on Swami's teachings of philosophy and Vedanta. I find that since clarity is required in Vedanta, the poetry has been simplified and written in a very simple form so that anybody should be able to grasp some of its basic principles.
And yes.
That way I think I have been quite happy with what I have been able to do.
Do you have a count of how many poems that you have written till now?
Around 35 to 38 maybe.
Okay, and all these are published poems or?
No, first 25 have been published.
Okay.
And the next balance is what I got here, unpublished works.
Okay, good.
I hope to publish them when I reach some other 10 poems or so.
Yes.
Get it.
Very good. Sir, so out of the 3 books that you have published yet, 2 are on poetry and 1 is on Adi Shankaracharya's Bhaja Govindam.
Oh, yes.
So can you speak a bit more on these books that you have written?
Yeah, the first book I wrote was Set Sail with Sai. It has got 3 portions.
Yes.
First one dealing with the part 1 description of Sai and his mission. That is called Glorious Sai.
Yes.
And the second portion is called What Sai Says, based on his teachings.
Okay.
And the third one, of course, is the parables of Sai, which is what like we call Chinnakathas.
Yeah. Okay. Beautiful. And what about the second book?
The second book was Bhajagovindam.
Okay.
In that, wherever possible, I have put in some Vedantic poems. But basically, it has been what Swami has told us and what I have understood myself from Swami's teachings. And the way to explain it through words of Adi Shankara. This is what I have tried to do. And this book has been quite popular among the Balvikas students and teachers.
Okay.
And the third reprint is going on now because the sale is also been fairly good.
Good, very good.
For a topic of this nature, I thought the sales may not be very good.
Yes.
Some of it has picked up.
And what about the third book, which is the latest in poetry series?
The third book is partly prose and poetry. Of course.
Yeah. Okay. It is not completely, not a book completely on poetry. Okay.
It is Wisdom of Sai.
Yes. Okay.
We call it Ride the Wisdom Wave with Sai.
Okay.
Yeah. That in fact you had done the cover page paper.
Yes. I got the opportunity to design a cover for your book.
Yeah. Book. Unfortunately, this book was written only after Swami's demise.
Okay.
Whereas the first one and partly the second one, I was able to get the manuscript blessed.
Wow, wonderful.
By Swami
wonderful.
In 2-0, 1-0.
Okay.
And so I was happy about what I had done.
Great.
This one, of course, is surely through prayers for grace from Swami rather than getting direct.
Yes. So did Swami ever tell you anything when you showed him the manuscript? Did Swami tell anything about poems, poetry? Did he mention anything to you?
No, nothing.
He just blessed the book.
Yeah, he blessed it.
Okay.
And it was not possible because he was busy with some other work and I happened to just slip in.
Okay.
And even then he could bless it, that's all, and placed it at his lotus feet.
Wonderful. So for the information of the listeners who would want to know more about these books, where can they get these books? Are these books available here in the ashram stores? Or?
Yeah, the first book, Set Sail with Sai, has been out of stock now.
Okay.
And they want to make a reprint.
Okay.
They are a little concerned because it's all poems.
Oh, okay.
And people don't really go for poetic literature.
Yes, unless they are attuned to that kind of poem earlier.
Right.
Yes.
So, first is out of print, it's not available in our bookstore. But the second one, Bhajagovindam, is doing fairly well. The third reprint is on.
Yes.
And the most, because the Balvikas programs and all, they find it useful, they are
going
for it and purchasing it also.
So. Also, the Ride the Wisdom Way with Sai, is that available in the Books and Publications Trust?
Yes, that is very much available right now.
Okay, very
that
good.
That is mostly a bit, I would say, a little bit on the deeper side.
Okay.
Because it uses some of the Upanishadic teachings and explanations.
Yes.
And not everybody would like to feel, you know, it entertaining, little bit of a thoughtful nature.
Yes.
So the sales on those kind of books may not be that favorable.
So Swami has always spoken about how music and other art forms like dance, dramatics, poetry, we have seen how Swami encouraged these art forms, you know, whether it dance, like we have the Prashanti dance group in the hostel.
Oh, yes.
We have the music group who gets this opportunity to sing every day in front of Swami. And then we have the dramatics group who gets to put up dramas fairly almost every few months. They have Swami interacts with them a lot. And then Swami has used to also conduct these poetry shows with students, you know. And I'm just wondering, so Swami has always said that these forms are like a direct path to God's heart, these art forms. Mm-hmm. So what role has poetry played in your spiritual growth or spiritual life?
Yeah, that's a little difficult to say because with me, the spiritual life and the studies of spiritual literature as well as depicting it in poetry form has not been much different from each other.
Okay.
I mean, they sort of merge. You know? I feel when I'm thinking of spiritual thoughts, they may come in poetic form sometimes in my mind.
Okay.
And I think that way I am inspired to try and more of those kind of thoughts to be put in on paper. See, of course, it's not that easy. You have to sometimes struggle with words.
Yes, yes.
And rhymes. Of course, thoughts and the ideas are there, but they have to be explained properly.
Yes.
Otherwise, poetry will not serve its purpose.
True, very true. Yeah, there are so many poems when I read, I really don't understand what the poet is trying to tell because of the complex nature of the idea or how he has put it in words. But your poems, I find, are very easy to understand.
Thank you. I think that is my main purpose, that what I do must be useful for others.
Yes, very true.
Must reach others.
Yes, yes. Where did this inspiration to take Swami's Chinnakatha and convert them into poetry, where did this inspiration come from? Did any particular incident trigger it?
Yeah. In fact, if you see one of the earlier poems on Chinnakathas is that court jester.
Yes. Okay.
The court jester, if you read, it's a little humorous, which
yes.
Swami had told the story. You know?
Yes.
And this we had depicted in a dramatic form among the Balvika students in Bombay. And our Nimish Pandya was so much enamored with that drama.
Yes.
That he said when Swami comes in December, we should put it up at Dharmakshetra.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
So he himself took a lot of interest in directing it and presenting it to Swami.
Which year was this, sir?
This was in 85.
Oh, okay.
1985. A long time
ago. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the drama was, of course, the dialogues and the direction was to some extent done by us and Nimish. And the whole thing was presented to Swami. And we had a nice time because Swami came into the green room when we were dressing up the children.
Yes.
And he spoke to each and every one of the actors individually
and with
a lot of jokes and humor.
Yes, yes.
One boy was acting the king. He said, "What are you?" He said, "I am the king." He said, "Of which country?"
Okay.
So that floored him. He didn't know what to say. So this kind of questions, you know. And another boy asked him, "What was your role?" He says, "I am a minister."
Okay.
See, is it a state minister or a cabinet minister?
So I don't think Balika's children know the difference between a state minister and a cabinet minister.
11, 12, 13 year olds.
Okay.
And then he came to the one who was chanting Bhajagovindam in that. That was my son there actually, as a sannyasi.
He was in the drama too,
he
your
was
son?
In the drama.
Okay.
He was 12 year old.
Okay.
And Swami asked him, "What are you?" And he said, "I am a sannyasi." Then he looked at Nimish Pandya and then he said, "Do sannyasis get married?"
Okay.
And he said, "No." And he pointed out Nimish Pandya. He said, "This man says he's a sannyasi, but he wants to get married."
Oh.
And he got engaged that year.
Oh, okay.
Swami only and arranged all.
Okay, okay. Nice.
So he kept on asking such questions and everybody was in laughter. The tension was not there, you know,
yes,
when they went
yes.
on stage.
Yeah, Swami always knows how to lighten up the atmosphere. Yes. That's very true.
That drama was made some impact also, and I felt that we could put it in a poetry form. That's how it all started.
So this was the first poem that you wrote?
First poem.
Which year was this, like when you wrote the poem?
I wrote when I came here.
After here, okay. So you are recollecting your olden days.
Olden days and taking
wonderful, yes.
Putting them into use.
Great. So now before we get into the select few poems that we have chosen for today's show, we can take a musical break. So dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai. And today we are discussing few poems that he himself has written, and we'll be right back after this musical break.
Shankara, abhayankara ಶಂಕರ ಅಭಯಂಕರ
Studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing poetry. Welcome back, sir, to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you, Chandu. Yeah.
So let us start with this poem that you have written, which is titled Boy Satyakama. So I will first read the first four paragraphs of this 18-paragraph poem, And then we shall see what this poem is all about. Mm-hmm. And the poem goes thus. Boy Satyakama, son of Jabala, in teens blossoms, soulfully pines, acutely yearns for truth to fathom, sets out an earnest quest of renowned Guru Gautama, esteemed Rishi, to help guide him the way to Brahman. The Rishi queries him on his antecedents true, his family, Gotra, full name, father's name too. The boy truthfully, humbly replies to sage's behest, "Sir, Satyakama am I, my mother is Jabala," he attests. "The name of my father I regret I do not know. Mother worked as a housemaid in several homes. She is ignorant too. I am a child of concupiscence." Guru ponders, awestruck at boy's good conscience. "None but a Brahmin's lad dare utter such hurtful truth. Child, am I not a father to you? From now on, stay here. Be thou a son to me. May God's grace shine on you. Satya is bid welcome to hermitage without much ado." So this is the first four paragraphs of this poem. So let us now find out from Sri Suresh Rao as to what this poem is all about. And does the boy Satyakama get what he sought out?
Yes, that's a good question. Satyakama is a legendary figure from our Upanishads.
Yes.
Many of us who have gone through the Upanishads are conversant with his life. And the Chandogya Upanishad, in fact, relates this story very well. This boy happens to be, he's an illegitimate child, in other words. And the guru's ashram, or the people who are, the boys who are called in, normally are from particular lineage and descendancy, and then people were very particular about their lineage and things like that. So when he's asked about this, he truthfully says, "I don't know who my father is." You know, that is a very damaging statement for a boy to make. Yes. But he utters it frankly, freely, fearlessly.
Yes.
And the guru is impressed with such a truthful boy. You know, and he says, "Only a Brahmin son can be so truthful, whenever, even when it is damaging him."
Yes, and the other hand, sir, we have the story of Karna. When he wanted to learn, he actually lies to his guru.
Guru, right. Yeah, Parshurama, yes. And he wants to pick up from him. He says he's a Brahmin boy.
Yes, correct. So on the other end, we have
Satyakama. Yeah, and you know what happened to him.
Karna,
you know?
Yes.
He gets the curse from his guru.
Correct.
And he loses the battle with Arjuna.
Yes.
So this truthfulness is very, very important. We
very
see
so.
That. Even one word can make a difference to your life and death. Satyakama is happy to be with his guru, and he grows up depending on the teachings of his guru, and he is very much devoted and faithful. And surprisingly, these gurus have a very different way of treating their pupils. They don't treat all as in the same category.
Okay.
Individually, they look out for their background, their affinities, and their likes, dislikes, and their attitudes, approach, etc. And accordingly, they decide on a treatment, you know, that is, education is for life.
Very true, yes.
They don't go for a living only.
Yes.
So he marks him out for a particular type of sadhana, and he says, "Your days of staying in the ashram are over. Today onwards, you have to take these 400 cows and go into the forest. And come back only when they become 1,000.
Oh, okay.
My God. That means he has to go there for several years.
Yes.
And he's all alone.
Yes.
And only with the cattle in the forest. Satyakama, being a very pious, faithful and devout student, agrees to do that. And he proceeds with this 400 cows into the forest. And I'll read out some passages.
Sure.
Which tell about what he thinks and what he does there. You know?
Yes, yes.
"Pious Satyakama enters the dark woods with cows and cattle, whom en route he befriends, make playmates and keenly prattle. Soulmates now to the whistling wind and the whispering trees, to the swans, chirping birds, peacocks, flowing streams. astute and devout Satyakama lives alone with the alone. In solitary retreat embraces voice of silence soul. He grows in beatitude, purity, contemplation, mellows with self-control, prayers, meditation. That's one of the ways he, you know, alone he is living in the forest.
Yes.
He learns to communicate with everything around him, nature.
Yes. Okay.
He lives in tune with nature, in other words. Daytime he speaks to the sunrise and sunsetting. At night the moonbeams, the starlit skies twinkling. In awe beholds spring, autumn, winter's colorful play. Moon's wax wane cycles, wonderful seasonal display. That means he goes through several years, several seasons, alone himself. The cows, bulls continue to multiply in scores. Satya evolves into a child of silence evermore. He has gone into that maunam state within himself. Grows in beauty, purity, humility, joy, elation. Ripens into love for God and God's wonder creation.
Wonderful. So it seems like a lot in, as the poem progresses, he learns a lot from nature, like how Guru Dattatreya did.
Right.
His, how many? Was it 11 teachers?
14, I
14
think.
14 of teachers of Guru Dattatreya, or more, yes. Like, so just wondering, in the current scenario now, when nature is being destroyed left, right, and center, I feel the story of Satyakama here is so relevant, or the story of the Dattatreya is so relevant now, as to how we can learn from these things, how we can learn from every aspect of God's creation.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on learning from nature?
In fact, that was the main thought behind doing this Satyakama story.
Oh, wonderful.
We are going away from nature.
Yes.
Only in the classrooms we have our studies mostly.
Yes, yes.
And from books.
Yes.
But nature is an open book before us all around.
Yes.
And we fail to learn from it.
Yes.
And with growth of technology and other scientific attitudes, most probably we will be aliens in our own country, in our own world, because of this lack of attunement with nature. See. So I feel that what the ancients have said, that sort of reverence for nature has to come back.
Yes.
Otherwise we will keep on exploiting nature in the name of progress.
Very true, very true.
That reverence will die out.
Yes.
And that's very harmful for us also, because man is also part of nature.
Correct, correct.
And we are not going in the proper direction. That's why I feel we should encourage more of the Upanishadic teachings, where thoughts on nature and reverence for nature are very, very profoundly talked about.
Yes, yes. So would you now narrate the rest of the story? Now what happens? Satyakama goes, he goes to the forest with all these cows, and then now he's trying to, not just trying to, he is experiencing that oneness with nature. Then what happens?
Gradually he becomes so much in tune with nature, and that yearning is there within him. See, this creation is so beautiful.
Yes.
Then how much more beautiful must be the Creator?
He starts wondering thus. Okay.
See, and the Creator is what is the source of all this beauty.
Yes.
Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
Yes, yes.
And he is very much yearning for that merging or realization of the Creator himself. See, like a story that goes, Swami has told this. A king sets up an exhibition.
Yes.
And he has all kinds of artifacts and things to see, you know, beautiful things which are very attractive. And everybody comes to see it. And there is one condition he has put. Whoever wants any one item from this can take it back to his home. I think you know the story. Swami has told this. So everybody is very happy. They go and take whatever gadget or whatever thing appeals to them. And finally one lady, a young lady, a maiden, comes there. She sees everything and is about to go back empty-handed. The king is perplexed. He says, there are so many attractive things here, and this young lady doesn't seem to be interested. So he approaches her and he says, "Madam, doesn't an exhibition appeal to you? Are you not interested in taking any item?" She says, "No, I don't want any item." He keeps on insisting, "Take at least one item." And she says, "I want one item, but only if you promise to give it to me."
Okay.
And he says, "Yes, anything you say, because he's the king."
Yes.
And she says, "In that case, I want you."
Oh. Because if I have you, then I have everything else.
Right, right. So the king is what you want. You know, the king, the creator of this universe is
yes,
the king.
Yes.
And all these artifacts and the gadgets you see around is nature in all its glory, of course.
Yes, yes.
But the person who can give up these kind of sensory joys and things and go after that which is the cause or the source of all sensory happiness, that source is the creator himself.
Yes.
And having got the king, she gets the entire exhibition also.
Wonderful.
So master of both.
Yes.
That's the beauty of this. And Satyakama is also doing this.
Yes, okay.
With the result that as he grows inwardly, spiritually, he starts communicating with nature all around him.
Okay.
The swans, the cows, the bullocks, and they start talking to him.
Okay.
And even the brooks and the streams and the trees.
They all teach him some lesson or the other.
And what they talk to him is sheer Vedantic truths.
Wow.
Brahman and all that. And he is in one, actually what Swami Vivekananda says about this. It is not that he is hearing the truth from these animals and birds. The truth is coming out from within the Atman. And the Atman is all pervading and it is one. So he feels that kinship with everything, one to one. And all the truths which come from outside as well as within are the same.
Yes.
And that he realizes and he's in a great bliss. See, it says here, "One fine morn with a glowing flash he envisions everything truly suffused with God, divine vision. Satya plunges headlong into ocean of Ananda, perceives blissful omnipresence, end to all sadhana. He feels oneness with all life, is truly attuned with the birds, the cows, the swans, the stones, the trees, the sun, stars, the sparkling streams, the blossoming flowers, the whistling breeze." Satyakama has received the answer to his query. He has struck the treasured trove's greatest discovery. Worthy of true veneration, eulogized by gods and man, he is truly at the rainbow's end of the eternal quest. And one day, one of the chief bulls, he tells him, "We are now 1,000, let us go back." See?
The guru had told him that, "Come back only when the number of cows are 1,000.
1,000.
Yes.
And the bulls tell him, he doesn't have to count them.
Yes, okay.
So he returns with the herd to the hermitage. And on the way back to the hermitage, the forest dwellers instruct him on Brahman, the streams, the flowers, the peacocks, the deer, the birds, the swans.
So all this,
everywhere he sees Brahman, in other words.
Very
truth.
True. Yes.
Is one.
Yes.
They all eulogize to him the glories of the great truth. On reaching the ashram gate, the guru glances forth. At Satya's gleaming eyes, his features lit up bright with supreme knowledge, love, humility, light. And the guru exclaims, "Blessed are you, Satyakama. Unto you is revealed the sage's flawless Brahman. The glorious, you have delved, plumbed the unknowable. Nothing more remains. You stand with the incomparable."
Wonderful.
Yes.
So with that, dear listeners, we will now take another short musical break. With me in the studios is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur, and today we are discussing poetry.
Jai
Welcome back, dear listeners. In the studios with me is Shri Suresh Rao of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing poetry. How poetry can be a great tool to learn the highest of Vedantic truths. So, sir, today, the next poem in our list for today is Most Beloved of the Gopis of Braj. So, as usual, I will read out the first few paragraphs of the poem and then you can explain to us what the poem is all about. And this poem goes thus. The celestial singer and wandering minstrel Narada is once afflicted with pride and egotism, and he surmises, Narayan, Narayan, the Lord's name on my tongue, see how it dances. In waking dream, deep sleep, it ceaselessly prances. Every moment, with every breath, does it glorify my Lord. Who else but I must be the most beloved devotee of all? Among the blessed few who know Krishna Avatara to be the incarnation of my Supreme Lord Narayana, today I call upon Dwarakadhish Krishna, the Omni Self. An audience with him is same as with Narayana himself. Narayan, Narayan. Krishna the omniscient sees things through beyond all precincts. My Narada is deluded. He foresees not his fall, his nemesis. Time is opportune to stem this fall from grace, damnation. Narada must digest a lesson in humility with supreme devotion. Narada has to be rid of this infirmity, the loss of dignity. It casts a stark shadow upon a mild mind filled with vanity. Delusion masks his face with a thick dark cloud. Krishna enacts a play to instill good sense, clear, loud. So this is a very famous Chinnakatha that Swami has narrated in many times during his discourses. So let us hear from Sri Suresh Rao, sir, what kind of play Lord Krishna enacted to save Narada from his fall?
It brings out beautifully the true sense of devotion that one must cultivate. And Narada had a flaw in his devotion, and that Krishna wants to bring it out. See, devotion does not have to stand up to dualities.
Yes.
It has to go beyond. Parabhakti, as Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa says, these gopis had that higher form of bhakti or devotion, where there is only oneness.
Yes.
You see oneness.
Yes.
And here Krishna says, I will have to bring Narada back to his senses, see what his flaw is and how he can get rid of his ego or egotism. So he feigns to act as a with a severe headache. He's lying in his palatial bed.
Yes.
With Satyabhama and Rukmini by his side, wringing hands and worried about his headache. He has got a severe headache. And as soon as Narada enters the portals, you know, he knows that Narada is on the way.
Yes.
To Dwarka. Krishna gets up with holding both his hands, the head, and says, oh, Narada, come in, welcome. This throbbing headache has got me vexed. Treatment eludes. Advisors, physicians are perplexed. The queens distressed have their minds in turmoil. Oh, this headache, none is able to assuage control. So saying, Krishna falls back on the bed, groaning. Narada is, of course, truly alarmed. He says, if the Lord himself is in trouble, then what about us? We are all at his mercy, rather.
Yes.
He says, Narayana, Narayana, Lord, what a statement. My heart jumps, thumps. Your illness, alas, a catastrophe must surely happen to the three worlds of mortals, jivas, and us devas. The entirety will plunge into darkness of chaos. For it is always your grace we seek during travels. Way beyond my ken, my reason, insight fails. And then suddenly gets an idea that Krishna has taken over this from a devotee.
Okay, see? Yes.
And he says, Narayana, Narayan, Narayan, Swami, now I know the good Lord has taken over to safeguard the favored devotee from disaster. Sufferings of his loyal devotee will thus pass over. Mysterious are the Lord's ways. none can fathom for sure. And Krishna smiles at this and says, "No, Muniver, you mistake. I haven't taken over, else for many of my devotees destined to suffer. This severe headache I have since last noon sunlit. Nothing else, only one certain way to end it."
Yes.
See, Narada sees some hope that at least the Lord can be given relief, you know, from this suffering. "Yes, my Lord, please show me how to allay it. If there is a panacea, I shall surely try and apply it." And Krishna says, his answer is very simple, according to Krishna. The remedy is very simple. He says, "Don't worry, Narada. Simple remedy is all I need. What I must have discreet is the dust swept from feet of any of my true devotees, sincere to the core, their holy dust to be applied to my brow." And he says, "I want the dust from the holy feet of any of a sincere devotee." That includes Narada also, if he is capable of giving that. "It will rid me of my headache, lull it instantly. Harrowing malady will then vanish completely. So bring me the dust of one of my bhaktas true. It isn't an unduly hard task that I assign you." So then Narada is given the job of bringing this dust from the holy feet.
Yes.
And he starts ruminating here in his own mind, what you call soliloquy. "One of my bhaktas true. Who else to name? Am I not moving in three lokas for Lord's sake, with Veena slung and lyrics of his name sung, his valued name all the while on my tongue? Where else is a greater bhakta than me? I shall certainly offer dust from my feet, an offer that will relieve him of his malady and accord relief both to Lord and his miladies." That is the queen's. "As soon as Narada bends and touches his soles, he is overcome with a feeling of true remorse. Gather the dust traces off my feet? Oh, not mine. Engulfed by a weighty sense of guilt," he opines.
So basically, now Narada, he is feeling that, "Am I not a great devotee? I can do this." But then now he is getting that guilt that, "Oh my God, but how can I put the dust of my feet on the Lord's head?"
Because we lay our head on his feet.
Yes.
And
correct.
Here it is the reverse situation.
Yes.
Suddenly he feels that I and he, you know, that thing comes in, duality comes in.
Yes. And finally, to whom does Krishna send Narada to get this dust of his feet?
When Narada says, "I cannot give it, and kindly pardon me."
Yes.
Krishna laughs. He says, "Is that final, Narada? Very well. Then take my advice. Go to Gopis of Vrindavan and make a request precise that they offer dust of their feet if their devotion is true. Possibly it will mitigate my throbbing headache too."
Yes.
So he rushes to Vrindavan. Narada has to go to Vrindavan to collect the... And he goes there, and there he sees that these gopis are involved with the Ras Lila or Ras Krida dance, with thoughts of Krishna all the time in their mind. So he waits for them until they finish their dance, and then the gopis see him, and they come to him and ask him, "Greetings to our Lord, celestial minstrel messenger. Welcome, Muniver. What pious errand brings you here? Is our Lord at Dwarka in good health, faring well? If not, what vexes my dear Lord? Kindly, hastily tell." So by now all gopis have ceased dancing and gather around Narada, perplexed, quizzing. Query is a hurried visit to bridge away from Dwarka. They sense all is not right with their darling Krishna. And when moment Krishna's name is uttered, they go into their
trance
state. "Oh, how much we miss him!" They weep and cry out. "Keshava, Madhava, Govinda," alternate chants with sobs, exclaim in tone his name, at times in rapturous delight, and other times in deep agony with soul's anguish, its plight. It is called supreme devotion, actually.
Yes.
You may look as if he is out of his senses.
Yes.
And that state is there in the only among the gopis, rare state,
yes.
Parabhakti.
And once Narada tells the gopis that yes. this is the way to remove Krishna's headache, that is by applying the dust of his sincere devotee's feet on the Lord's forehead.
Head, yeah.
So now how does the gopis react to this in contrast to how Narada reacted?
Yes. The gopis, they look at each other when Narada puts this query, yes. whether they can give the dust. And they are in quizzical surprise. I mean, so they can't understand what is the logic behind this. Is that all? They say, by applying the dust of our feet, Lord proclaims it headache can will abate. Then by all means take it, rush it this instant. How can we let Lord suffer even for an extra second?
Yes, so that is a difference.
That's the difference. And so saying, gopis wipe the dust from their feet, collect it meticulously in a silken cloth kerchief, wrap it up and hand over to Narada hurriedly. Request him to hasten to Dwarka expeditiously. And then Narada, of course, goes and reaches Dwarka, hands over
the cloth kerchief to the revered
queens, Satyabhama yes. and Rukmini, and yes. tells them, this is the dust I bring from the hallowed feet of the gopis. Kindly apply it.
Yes.
And the queens apply the dust on Lord's forehead. Presto, Krishna sits up sprightly, ache quelled. And then Krishna says joyously, Narada, look at the gopis' matchless devotion. Simple, guileless, free from guilt, egotism. They hesitate not to give the dust of their feet, delayed not even for a single moment sweet. They had no consciousness of their gross bodies. Soul wished to allay my illness, to see that it mollifies. Profoundly perturbed about their Madhusudan, his extreme distress, craved his relief, all unbidden. And then he gives a bit of a
scolding to Narada.
Scolding to Narada.
Yes.
He says, and you, Narada, what ails you? Your predicament. You ventured not to give the dust of your feet. You considered yourself as different from me, conscious of separate existence apart from me. I am the Lord of all and one with thine. Your dual mind and feelings of I and mine made you desist from parting with feet dustings. Recognize unfeigned devotion, own shortcomings. So Narada then hangs down his head in remorse, contrition. His pride takes a nosedive with Lord's admonition. The bubble has been pricked, egotism to collapse. Is sadder, wiser, henceforth not ever to relapse. Narayan, Narayan.
Say, this poem is so beautifully written. And possibly is it one of your biggest poems, because this almost runs into 5 pages in the yeah. print that I have here with me.
Some 34 stanzas.
Wonderful. Sir, you have so beautifully communicated the essence of the Chinnakatha as the poem. So how do you write these poems without losing the essence of Swami's story, yet infusing a unique element to this whole story?
Well, I guess I have a fancy for details.
Okay.
So I try to take Swami's words, which are quite, apt and to the point.
Yes.
And try to dilate on it and make it into a more, embellish it with my own thoughts and
yes.
Words. And give it some shape, you know, like a story, in the form of a story. And the lesson, of course, is the most important thing.
Wonderful.
Central
yes.
idea. Yeah, yes. That has to be maintained, kept in mind all the time.
Yes. Sometimes what happens in the process of embellishment, the message can get lost. Too much embellishment can cover up the message.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I guess you have very beautifully maintained that balance in keeping the message and embellishing it so beautifully and making this poem soothing to the ear when you listen.
It's Swami's grace, I guess. Swami is always with me when I do this. And he is guiding my
yes.
thoughts, guiding yes. my hand. I owe it all to Swami. I don't have any particular skill. Because I started it only at the age of 62.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. So, dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao of Radio Sai. And today we are discussing poetry. Stay tuned. We have more such wonderful poems coming up after this musical break. Dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing poetry. How poetry can be a great tool to learn the highest of Vedantic truths. So, sir, the next poem for today is Brahma's Three Boons.
Yes.
So, as usual, I will read the first few stanzas and then we will discuss what the poem is all about. And this poem goes thus. Gods, humans, asuras invoke through rigorous austerities. Earnest supplications, Lord Brahma, creator venerate. Seek mantropadesh and spiritual counsel direct. Fully gratified, the Lord elects to give darshan, instruct. The resplendent Lord with his four heads, four golden visages, four arms carrying the four Vedas and lording over the eight dishas. Adorable silvery grey beard portrays sage-like wisdom, astride white swan sport crown of pearls golden diadem. His followers are enthralled by the supreme darshan, but Brahmaji is in a bind. A congregation so diverse, clearly their ingrained sattvic, rajasic, tamasic bent, doth refashion, remould their spiritual advancement. How to guide, bless this mixed coterie of aspirants, disparate elements eager to listen to his diktats. Next, to abide by his mandate, a profound perplexity, wholly hinged onto their mental spiritual maturity. Now let us find out from Sri Suresh Rao, sir, what this poem is all about and how does Lord Brahma cater to this diverse crowd who has come for spiritual counsel. What does he say that can appease everyone's spiritual thirst?
Yes, this has beautifully brought out by Swami in his Chinnakatha.
Yes.
In one of his talks.
Yes.
And this is true of all of us, that we have people at various levels of understanding, various levels of development, growth in spirituality.
True.
And wisdom. And so one kind of lesson to all can cause some problems.
Yes, that is very true.
Misunderstanding is more possible. So Brahma is in a similar situation, but being the creator himself, he knows how to handle it maybe.
Yes.
He just utters one syllable, da,
yes,
and disappears.
Okay.
Goes, makes an exit. And the three types of people, the devas, asuras and danavas.
Asuras and then men?
Manavas.
Manavas, yes.
These three type of people have come to him. Devas representing the sattvic nature.
Yes.
Manavas, the rajasic nature.
Yes.
And the asuras being the tamasic nature.
Yes.
Bent.
Yes.
So seeing these three types of varieties, Brahma gives the word da and disappears. And these three sit and discuss. They are very happy. They have got a darshan. They have got even the...
Sambhashan,
yes. Right. So they are very happy. They have got the word from Brahma. And they think and discuss over it frankly and honestly. See, that is a beautiful thing. They are not trying to... They only succeed in fooling themselves otherwise.
Yes.
And then the asuras are the first to come out. And we have tried to explain how they look and
yes,
all that.
Okay.
But mainly their qualities are of a tamasic nature.
Yes.
And they are bloodthirsty, they are violent, they don't have reverence for the scriptures, they destroy, kill and all that.
Yes.
And so they take stock of their own situation, self-assessment, you know,
yes,
self-audit. And they come out with this, whatever they have assessed. We are infamous for our atrocious adventures among gods and men with an innate bloodthirsty nature. Stubborn and mean, we flout acts deemed meritorious, show disrespect for rituals, Vedas, sacred scriptures.
Yes.
So that is basically their attitude towards life.
Yes.
So they say the should definitely mean daya, because we lack this compassion.
Yes.
We lack kindness in our hearts.
Yes.
We're stone-hearted. So this daya is what we have to spread and assimilate in our own minds and hearts. And so they go back happy, saying that daya is what is their mantra.
Yes.
That they have received.
Yes.
That is the way to overcome their tamasic minds, tamasic tendencies. Then come the humans who have also analyzed this deeply, and they have come to the conclusion that no, daya is not the thing for us, because we don't go around killing people all the time or showing disrespect for scriptures.
At least humans of that age. I'm sure for humans of this age,
now
daya
we are all
would be a very apt word.
In Kali Yuga, I think they're more of asuric nature.
Yes.
Scriptures have no relevance to many. So the humans have gone through it, and they feel this daya, it could be dana for us, dana. Because
charity,
dana is charity.
Dana is charity, yes.
Because man is by nature greedy.
Yes.
We see it in our life. You know, you have one car, you want to have another car.
Yes.
You have one bungalow, you want to have two more bungalows.
And you
have
always
five bank accounts, you want to have 10 bank accounts.
You always want what your neighbor has.
Keeping up with the Joneses, as they say.
Yes.
The latest development, the latest modern things, and the greed for more and more, although it may not be really needed. See. So they say this what we need is to do daan, charity, give to the people who are lesser privileged, I mean, who need it, you know. So we must be able to give, not just grab. And there's the basic idea they are getting from here, that you have to be more charitable to our brothers,
yes,
and sisters.
Yes.
So they go back happy that they have got the mantra pradesh. You know. Daan is what their commandment is,
yes,
to be followed. And then the gods, these gods are of course saying, again they say, no, we have done a lot of charity when we were born as men on earth. And therefore we have attained to this state of godhood,
yes,
the heavens, by doing charity and some good deeds. So Daan is not our commandment. There must be a higher commandment. And they think about it and then they say, yes, we have some weaknesses. And that is weaknesses for sense gratification.
Yes.
Face it, our minds are at times under sway, most partial to heaven's celestial dancers gay. And you have these celestial dancers in the heavens, you know, there to entertain you and with music and dance. And so they fall a prey to this sense enjoyments, yes, delights. Maybe sophisticated or maybe more cultured, but still it is sensual desires. Yeah. And they say that is why we are not able to get the highest realization, God realization. They are gods,
yes,
but they are not the highest
yes,
aspect of Godhood. You
yes
know, that is the eternal Godhead we are not. Because after some time they enjoy the fruits in the heavens, they again come back on earth. It's not a permanent thing. They are still bound by the cycle of birth and death.
Yes.
And we need to realize our higher nature, which is freedom from all birth and death, freedom from the cycle of birth and death, etc. And so they say we must have this daman.
Daman
stands for daman or self-control.
Okay, okay. Daman means so self-control.
Daman,
okay,
yeah.
Wonderful.
That is indriya nigraha, we call it.
Yes.
Sense control.
Yes.
So that is required for highest realization. So they say, go back. They say, yes, we should try and practice this sense control more and more so that we can ultimately reach the highest level of realization. That is, in the Vedantic form, it is that Brahman, realization
yes
of Brahman.
Yes.
And they return to the heavens happily. So this is what Swami has told in his story in a gist form.
Yes.
We have tried to make it more elaborate. And some few descriptions of natures, different natures. I hope it makes some sense.
Yes, yes, very true, very true. And you end the poem, the last paragraph.
Yeah.
You say that Swami's words, the ocean is one, almighty, infinite, but the azure waters one takes away from it,
yeah,
depend on the size, capacity of one's container. Self-purify, an expanded heart holds more. Be undeterred. So says our illustrious Sai, so say the sagacious sages of yore. I think it is such a very relevant message for the current times, because a lot of times what happens even in Swami's discourses, he talks about all the paths, because they say that there are as many paths to God as there are men on earth.
Yeah, right.
So Swami talks about Bhakti Marga, Jnana Marga, Karma Marga, and people tend to get confused. Somebody wants, they want to follow Bhakti Marga, they also want to follow the Karma Marga, they also want to follow the Jnana Marga, even though some of them may not be really made for following a particular path. For example, certain devotees are, they like to do service. Some,
yeah,
if you, for example, if you take like the Hyderabad youth, and they do a lot of great,
lot of
amazing
things,
service. Like that, some of certain devotees may be good at Bhakti Marga. They like to sing. They may not be very physically active people. They may not, they,
yeah,
but they might be very, they like meditation. They like to attend bhajans. They like to attend meditation camps and things like that, satsangs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it is very important that people understand and take what exactly is relevant for them, and rather not get confused with all this diverse type of information that is available in here.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is a beautiful take-home message, in my opinion.
Oh, yes, yes. Because the thing is, basically man is partly intellectual, partly physical,
yes,
partly emotional.
Yes, very true.
And these,
yes,
yogas are meant for catering to those attributes of man.
Correct, know? Correct, yes.
Jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, karma
yes
yoga.
Yes.
Now some may be more of the active nature.
Yes.
Physical nature.
Correct.
So for them, Karma Yoga appeals.
Yes, yes. True, true.
Some who are emotional and, you know, they're having a form of devotion.
Very true. But
for them it is
Bhakti Yoga. Yoga. Yes, yes.
That's why we find more women having this Bhakti path also.
Yes, yes.
And Jnana, of course, is what is meant for the intellectual
self. Yes, otherwise Jnana Marga especially can be very confusing for people who are not intellectually mature enough to
right,
understand
right,
it.
Right, right, right. It's possible that misunderstand it.
Yes, very true, very
so
true.
But since man is a combination of all these three with different ratios, He can make use of all these three, provided he knows the value of and how to apply it.
Yes. So, dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing poetry. Stay tuned, we have more such beautiful poems coming up after this musical break.
जपते रहो मन में साईं राम,
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 श्री राम जय जय राम,
श्री राम जय राम,
श्री राम जय राम, जय जय राम,
श्री राम जय राम, जय जय राम,
जपते रहो मन में साईं राम,
studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing poetry as to how poetry can be a great tool to learn the highest of Vedantic truths. Sir, the next poem that we have chosen for today is If You Need Me, You Deserve Me. And as usual, so I will read the first few paragraphs of the poem and then we will see what the poem is all about. The poem goes thus: the seeker forays into the dense jungle, trudges along with care across the infested region. Soon the angry roar of a ferocious lion he doth hear, hurriedly scrambles up a banyan tree with fear. The lion glares at him, cringing among the tree foliage, goes around the tree growling, lashing its tail in rage. At hand on the tree branch is a fierce snarling bear, poor man grasps two hung roots, clings for his dear life midair. That instant, he sees two rats, one black, one white, gnawing each root, jeopardizing his life by every bite. In this hour of peril, sights a honeycomb on treetop, pines to quench thirst with its dripping honey drops. The poor man stretches, puts his tongue out for a lick, but the drop falls afar, disables him to get a single sip. Miserable, helpless, in agony, cries out for his Swami, "O Guruji, have mercy, please come and save me." So I'll stop here and then we will see what happens to the man. Is he saved?
Yes, yeah, it's a wonderful story given by Swami.
Yes.
And how condition of man is brought to this sorry state of affairs is true for all of us, actually.
Very true.
And when he calls out for the guru, that's when the guru, passing by, hears this shout.
Yes.
He dashes off to the devotee's rescue without a doubt. Wielding mighty weapons of bow, the lion he slays, vanquishes the bear, and scares off the rodents straight away. And then takes him to the higher level of understanding. Takes him to his ashram and,
yes,
takes him to the goal of life and how to rise above these sufferings and miseries.
So is this a poem, poem symbolic of anything? Like, for example, the lion, the rats,
right?
What do they represent?
Yeah, here it says, the world is the jungle in which we roam.
Okay.
That's what Swami says.
Yes.
The world around is a jungle.
Yes.
Fear is the lion which drives us up the samsara tree.
Okay.
It is the fear that causes us to get entangled in this worldly things.
Yes.
Hoping to get happiness out of it, you know. Sensual pursuits and things, and we think that we'll get freedom from this.
Yes.
Just like that. It's not possible. Anxiety is the bear that terrifies and threatens you, he says. The bear stands for anxiety and,
yes,
worry, which come with the attachments and, you know, desires. And because of the past karmic loads also. And you binding deeds. And how you do it? Through the twin roots of hope and despair.
Okay.
Samsara means pairs of opposites.
Yes, yes.
Good, bad, right, wrong,
right,
honor, dishonor, happiness, sorrow, hope, despair. So these paired opposites are the two roots which are hanging, and you cling to that.
Yes.
To escape from the lion, the bear. And then the two rats represent time, actually, day and night.
Okay.
They keep on cutting off your, sniping at those roots, you know, and,
yes,
it's likely to drop you,
yes,
down. And while all this is happening and man is in great trouble, which sometimes he doesn't know he's in trouble, he sees some honey drops falling, you know, from the honeycomb, and he tries to get a few minutes of respite or enjoyment from it. That is the sorry state of affairs. And he finds that it is too far and he's not getting it, because these are all temporary things. It don't give you full satisfaction.
Yes.
Come and go type of things, you know. So in agony he shouts, what else to do? I'm in bad shape. And he calls out to the guru. That is the turning point in his life. He realizes the value of the guru and spirituality.
Yes.
And the guru is always waiting. That's why Swami says, if you need me,
you deserve
me.
Yes. That's such a powerful statement.
Very,
very powerful.
And that is when time, but you should have a real need.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the time when the guru appears on the scene. He's got his bows and arrows and all those mighty weapons. He slays the lion, kills the bear, drives away the rats, things like that, and takes him in his fold, you know, with his strong arms. He leads him to his ashram or a place of instructions.
Yes.
And guides him, guards him, does everything for him, and also leads him to the goal.
Yes.
Where he can be free from this type of miseries, you know, dualities and samsara.
Yes.
And fears. And helps him to cultivate all this viveka, egolessness,
yes,
freedom from anxieties and suffering.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's what the essence of Swami's words. You put it in a poetic form.
Wonderful, sir. Mm-hmm. Sir, unfortunately, as the time is running out, we will have to conclude our session today.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, we can resume this with more poems next week.
Oh, yes.
జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, జడులు తెలియగలరేని సంగతి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, జడులు తెలియగలరేని సంగతి. హరివో మరి హరుడవో ఎవరైననేమి, అందరిని బంగారు అని పిలిచే స్వామి. హరివో మరి హరుడవో ఎవరైననేమి, అందరిని బంగారు అని పిలిచే స్వామి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, జడులు తెలియగలరేని సంగతి. పుట్టపర్తిలోనున్న పుడమి అంతా నీదే, ఎట్టి ఎండకైనా నీ గొడుగు నీడమాదే. పుట్టపర్తిలోనున్న పుడమి అంతా నీదే, ఎట్టి ఎండకైనా నీ గొడుగు నీడమాదే. రాతి గొంతు తడిపి తప్పి తీర్చిన చేయి, పాతలన్నీ మార్చేసిన రత్నాకర సాయి. రాతి గొంతు తడిపి తప్పి తీర్చిన చేయి, పాతలన్నీ మార్చేసిన రత్నాకర సాయి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, జడులు తెలియగలరేని సంగతి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, జడులు తెలియగలరేని సంగతి. వేదంలో గడబెట్టే నాదాని వినివే, శ్వేతంలో మొలకెత్తే మోదాని వినివే. వేదంలో గడబెట్టే నాదాని వినివే, శ్వేతంలో మొలకెత్తే మోదాని వినివే. ఆశయాని ఆచరణ పుట్టట చేసిన దేవా, ఆదర్శం అడుగడుగున శృతి చేసిన ప్రభువా. ఆశయాని ఆచరణ పుట్టట చేసిన దేవా, ఆదర్శం అడుగడుగున శృతి చేసిన ప్రభువా. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, జడులు తెలియగలరేని సంగతి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి, జడులు తెలియగలరేని సంగతి. జనుల మధ్య తిరుగాడే జగపతి.